Today on The Breakdown, no funny opening today. It's all business all the time today. I've got my suit on. I'm wearing a hat, but it's a business hat. They make those at like Brooks Brothers. It's a Brooks Brothers business hat. And we've got people who have had issues with us in the past actually playing this hand now that I think about it. Daniel Negreanu and Matt Berkey are in this hand. And they both have had, you know, to differing levels, a little bit of a thing. I'm going to say a little bit of a thing with us. And I don't know if they still exist, these things, or these people. Matt Berkey and Daniel Negreanu may no longer exist. They may have blinked out of existence. They may have been snapped out of existence like Thanos was involved. I don't know what's happening right now. We're going to play a hand between these guys. 100, 200 grand? Is that right? 200, 400 grand? 200, 400 cash game with these guys. It's big time. Dan Smith is in this hand as well. And I'll just say this. Everybody's bluffing. Nobody's got anything. And woo-wee. It's let's put in a lot of money with nothing. What do we? Let's try that. Let's see what happens then. Who can out-bluff the other? Can it be the tall guy or the Canadian? I don't know. Let's do it on The Breakdown with Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
Hey,
like first time though. Like,
we find that next to the body.
I don't know. I don't know anymore about anything. I was like, I'm just going to do a straight opening. That was how I started.
Oh, yeah. That's what that turned into. real straight opening.
Yeah. Well, as soon as I tell everyone I'm doing a straight opening, it's never going to be straight. Right?
So how do we accomplish a straight opening? We talk about it beforehand. I have to like really somberly and convincingly tell you like it's really important to do a straight opening this time for whatever reason. And then you actually have to execute.
I'm going to do it soon. Not this time, but soon. Because it'll be like an anti-meme. It'll be like a joke without a joke. You know what I mean? If I just do a very straight, non-funny, non-weird opening and just never talk about it, you know? Just like not be meta with it, not be anything, not laugh. Just give a little cold open teaser and get to
I'm curious if you can actually pull it off.
I think I can. But I'm like the little train that could, and he didn't always make it.
He couldn't.
Yeah. Sometimes the little train can't.
Yeah. He didn't make it.
Little Train That Can't. Now that's a book I'd read.
Yeah, because you like the darkness.
Yeah, I do. I want people to fail.
Thomas the Tank Engine needs a dark ending. I need to see the innards of Big Bird during Sesame Street. I need to see him as a GI in Vietnam just destroyed. Like, that's what I need.
Yeah, but I don't want to see him die in Vietnam. I want to see him come home and face the darkness.
Right. No, he comes. he realizes he's killed many, many people. He doesn't even know how many because of, you know,
right,
the distance and the explosions.
How many kids were even in that school when I threw the grenade in there?
Yeah. And it's just, it haunts him and he slowly descends into darkness and gets whatever Big Beard gets on his face when he doesn't shave for a while. And, you know, it's dark.
Yeah.
And it does not end with him making it. It does not end that way.
Have you ever seen the movie Private Parts? It's the Howard Stern movie.
No, I recognize the cover in my head of like him as a giant in New York or whatever. Like that's what the cover.
Oh, that's right. That's right. So I've seen that movie a bunch actually. It's quite a good movie. And I'm not kidding.
Really?
Like, that's not a joke. It's quite good.
He said, I'm not kidding because I was looking at him like, are you serious right now?
Yeah. Like you would think I was joking. I understand. It's autobiographical and it's really quite good. And the moment where he sort of becomes Howard Stern is he's got his show. He's got Robin Quivers, the woman who's still with him now. She was just doing the news. She was the new news person. And he was always fucking with the news people and they didn't like it and couldn't handle it. And so he could never find a partner to like vibe with. And this is her, at least according to the movie, her first day. And he starts talking about how when he was in Vietnam, that, you know, he had like something like 80 confirmed kills or something like that. But he really didn't think that was right. And he really didn't think that was fair. Because when you throw an explosive into a building, like a school with a bunch of kids, they only give you one kill for that. And he needs to get credit for every single child who died. And Robin Quivers is going to say, like, you weren't even born when Vietnam happened. You know, so it's clear he's joking, right?
Yeah.
But, like, there was something about that where it's like he like figured out like, oh, this is the edge I can be on, you know? Mm-hmm. And now I think he then took it to many other places, even in the movie he does, where it becomes a little lower brow, shall we say?
Sure.
But that, just what we're saying right now, just reminded me of that a little bit.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Anyway.
Darkness. You got to embrace the darkness.
Got to embrace the darkness, man.
Seriously, if you want to impress Jonathan Levy, if if you're a movie producer and your only goal is to impress Jonathan Levy for whatever reason.
There could be reasons.
Maybe he becomes the richest man in the world by selling t-shirts with his face on it.
Possibly.
It could happen.
I've been thinking about that.
Yeah. It's a good idea to make it so nothing works out for the hero, ever.
Right.
Like, things go poorly, and it's not no happy endings. Jonathan wants pain and suffering, and that's all.
Here's a great example to me of a really good movie, because it does versions of what you're saying, but also, if you're not paying close attention, you don't realize it's as dark as it is, and it's White Men Can't Jump. Hmm. White Men Can't Jump, I think people think of as this like really fun movie, you know, about basketball hustlers, and I think they would all, without thinking about it, would say it was a happy ending. It's really not a happy ending. Woody Harrelson never changes at all. He's always a gambling addict to the point where Rosie Perez leaves him at the end because he can't change. And even at the very end, even after she leaves, he like needs to find action and needs to bet his whole bankroll on something that he probably can't win because he just can't help himself. But the movie is wearing the clothes of a normal, like more rom-com-y type thing. It's really kind of brilliant.
I see.
Love that movie.
I don't even remember the ending, but I do remember enjoying the movie.
She goes on Jeopardy and wins.
Oh, yeah.
And he's immediately trying to talk her into... Oh, she gives him some money with some to like go buy some nice clothes so he can get a job, and he goes and immediately gambles it and loses it. And he comes back and is explaining why it happened the way it did. You know, he's always got his reasons. And she and now he's saying he just needs a little more of the money now so he can win it back. And she like kisses him and roller skates away. And it's clear she's not coming back, but he doesn't really get that she's not coming back. But we get it at the audience if we're not caught up in this. Everything always has a happy ending thing. It's really cool. It's a little more subtle than a lot of these other movies. But yeah, Woody Harrelson has this thing. His arc is he doesn't change. And because we expect change so much in these types of movies, it's extra impactful, I think. Mm. It's beautiful.
I see.
They're remaking that movie. I don't know why. It's perfect. Marquise Johnson is in that movie.
Who's that?
He's an ex-NBA player. Who is not a good actor, but was in one of the pickup basketball scenes. He's the guy who something happens. He's like, "I'm gonna go get my gun," and everyone starts running. He goes and actually gets his gun, and like that actually used to happen. I think he actually used to do that for real, like in pickup games when he'd get angry, and I think that was like a real thing.
Sounds like a reasonable response to losing at basketball.
Yeah, you know, I think you know someone disagreed with a call or something. Anyway, that's enough for like 80s movies day.
That was like 94.
Was it that late? Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah, it was definitely 90s.
God, that movie's good. You know, one other quick fun fact about that. Woody Harrelson, pretty good at basketball, as it turns out. Wesley Snipes, absolutely terrible at basketball.
Really?
Horrible. If you watch, you can see he can't even really dribble. Like, they have to cut it very carefully.
Yeah,
even then, they can't.
That seems a bit familiar.
His dribble's really high, and he can't really control it. And, like, Woody Harrelson's is pretty smooth and, like, really can hit a bunch of those shots and... It's cool.
I mean, Woody Harrelson can do anything, right?
It seems like Woody Harrelson can do anything, and he has looked almost the same for like the last 40 years.
He looks significantly older.
He's 60. Of course he looks a little bit older. Like, give me a break. Yeah. He's 60.
Yeah. He's on Cheers.
He's in a new movie that just came out, I think, today or yesterday called The Man from Toronto with Kevin Hart. I don't know anything about it, and I won't be seeing it.
He's in Now You See Me and Now You See Me Too.
That's right.
Which are...
He's the only good thing in those movies.
There's nothing good about those movies.
All right,
I mean, I haven't seen the second one, but there's nothing good about
those. Hey, Isla Fisher's in the first one. You keep your
mouth closed. All right, I forgot that's your secret love.
She's one of them.
But Sacha Baron Cohen is so much better than you.
I know. Lizzie Kaplan's in the second one. That's not bad either.
I'll draw the celebrity crushes.
Yeah, like, they keep replacing him with the right... They do
it great. The only good thing about the Now You See Me movies is that Jonathan's celebrity crushes are in them, including Jesse Eisenberg.
Hey, come on. It's all Jesse Eisenberg. It's also about magic and magic tricks, which in theory is cool. Like,
it is
that could
theoretically
be great.
Cool, except that it's actually about literal magic.
Sometimes, but not always.
Even though I'm sure we've done rants on this shit before.
I'm sure. I know we have.
I haven't seen the second one, but I know in the first one that like a lot of the big time tricks they do are like, that's just actual magic. These are actual wizards.
There's right? There's a video that I have seen by Leo Vader on YouTube, which I think it's called "Are the Magicians in Now You See Me Actually Wizards?" And he actually like goes into it and, you know, gives lots of examples, and it's really funny and great. And the answer is, usually it's impossible to, like you're saying, usually these tricks are physically impossible to do. Like, there's no way that person could be there and then there. There's no world where that could ever happen. Lots of things. Like, here's a bit where Isla Fisher's head falls off, or Lizzie Kaplan's head falls off, just out of nowhere. Yeah. Like, and that's like the trick, but what? She was just there. Like, her head is no longer on her body. Like, and now she's fine again. Like, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I know that you love it when they jump off the building and turn into money.
Yeah.
But that's a great one. That's a great example of this. I think there's a bit too where Jesse Eisenberg, like,
just think about that sentence. You love it when they jump off the building and turn into money.
Yeah. I think there's a bit where, like, Jesse Eisenberg maybe, like, falls into, like, a pool of water and into, like, a puddle and, like, falls through it as if, and then just is gone, like, somehow.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any
sense.
It's
more of a Harry Potter movie than a magician movie.
It's also got here we go. Like, Mark Ruffalo is the cop who's chasing them, but is also the guy who is working with them, but they don't know he's working with them. But he's, like, the guy behind all the tricks. Why is he chasing them so hard? He's doing a really good job chasing them and figuring and getting in their way and stopping them. If he just didn't try so hard, they would have no problem doing the plan that he's got them doing.
I think you know why.
I mean,
when Ruffalo commits, it's full bore.
Yeah, he's always angry.
Yeah.
That's a cool reference just did.
Oh, yeah. Super cool.
Do you get it?
Nobody's seen that indie movie that you're talking about.
It's the Avengers.
I know.
Oh, really?
Jesus.
Oh, God.
Learn to be fucked with.
I didn't know you were that good.
Yes,
Grant.
You did.
No. Not that good.
Well, now you see
That's
me.
A different level.
Now you see me.
That's good, too. Wow, you're on fire. Kid's on fire,
Here's
people.
The deal. I'm always on fire. You've just never seen it before with your true eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I want to talk about something else from the opening.
Great.
Business hats.
I know, right?
That used to be a thing. Like, think about Al Capone.
Did Al Capone wear a hat, though? People wore hats. Oh, you're right. They all wore, but men always, it wasn't business. Men just wore hats until JFK didn't. You know, that's what it was. JFK at his inauguration didn't wear a hat, and it was a huge deal in the United States, and suddenly men stopped wearing hats.
Check out this picture of Al Capone. He's got a hat and a suit.
He does, but that's because everyone wore a hat. So I guess you had a business hat and a regular.
I mean, that's not a hat that you wear with a t-shirt. That's a suit
hat.
Yeah,
you're right. You're right. Okay, business hats. They were a thing. How crazy is it that men just all wore hats and then suddenly they were like, oh, we don't have to wear hats anymore? This is great.
you know, a lot of people say FDR is one of the greatest presidents in history.
Right.
But that's the beginning of the fall of civilization when men stopped wearing hats with suits.
It was JFK, not FDR.
Oh, JFK.
Different guy.
Different three letters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the F is.
Yeah, so FDR is safe. He's still great.
Yeah.
JFK, maybe don't get shot. Maybe wear a hat next time.
Wow. I like presidents who don't get assassinated, says Grant. Unbelievable.
Maybe if he wore a hat made of steel.
It might have been harder to hit him in the head, though. They might have, like, whoever was shooting, I'm not claiming I know who it was, might have missed a little more often.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe you should have thought about that.
It's been long enough. We can make these jokes. You know,
it's really
no one's going to get upset about these jokes. That's so nice.
I know the whole formula is tragedy plus time equals humor.
Correct.
Right, but that's not really true. There's an extra element to that formula, which is the volume of the tragedy or the severity of the tragedy.
Sure.
Because I'm pretty sure Holocaust jokes are still not super chill, and that was before JFK.
That is true. They are not super chill. Part of it is because it's about a group of people being discriminated against who still often are discriminated against. So it makes the
presidents aren't still assassinated.
It's a little different, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's a piece of it too. I would say that 9/11 jokes are probably more common than Holocaust jokes at this point. Now, a lot more people died in the Holocaust, but it's not about once you're in the thousands, I don't think it's any different.
Yeah,
there.
People aren't good at large numbers.
But I think like 21 years later, like you can make a 9/11 joke and get away with it. Pretty much.
I think it's it's close, man.
Really?
I mean, there's too many people who are still directly affected alive.
That is true. But, you know, we're on the West Coast, so we don't see too many of them. I was on the East Coast when it happened. And then I moved to New York not long after. So actually, I knew people who knew people and stuff like that for sure. Actually, a friend of mine, one of her coworkers was working at NPR and was there when it happened and watched someone standing on the ground, and one of the first people who jumped landed on the person in front of them.
Wow.
And both people, of course, died.
Doesn't seem
right
like,
in front of them.
It doesn't seem like a great thing to joke about.
Can you? No, I would never joke about that. Oh my God. Isn't that horrific? So can you imagine being that person? I cannot.
I think we should dive more into this because this is
really
the tragedy plus time thing.
Okay.
Because I find it interesting.
Because I think
it's just totally wrong, right? Like the JFK thing is a tragedy. That's like most people would agree that's a tragedy.
Of course.
But the Holocaust is also a tragedy. So if just being categorically a tragedy doesn't mean it's the same amount of time before.
Like, I don't think anyone said any tragedy plus a certain amount of time makes it funny.
Yeah, that's true.
You just sort of decided that, right?
Okay, but that's what it sounds like, sort of.
No, it's just a very general guideline, which is like the way you really make the funniest joke is you find something that was once tragic, but now it's been long enough that you can, this is the kind of thing contextually you can make jokes about and the audience won't be upset and won't be as offended and can find the humor in it. And now with that darkness piece too, that's where you're really going to find the best stuff.
Well, some things I don't think we'll ever have a time when you can make jokes about it. Like, you can make jokes about stuff that's really, really old, really, really old, like the Mongols invading China and Eastern Europe. Like, that was a huge tragedy for that part of the world, but you can make Mongol jokes about that time period now.
There are certain kinds of Hitler jokes you can make.
Certain kinds,
but there's, I mean, so when I was at grad school, I was the editor-in-chief of a sarcastic newspaper. Mm-hmm. Like a funny, like our version of The Onion, basically, right?
So like a bad version of The Onion.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like it was 20 years ago. It was popular, but yes, of course, it was not The Onion. And so I was also the main writer. And so we put out, I think, 4 issues. And every issue, I made a Hitler joke.
Because you just wanted to be subversive?
No, I thought it was really funny. I made different funny, well, I thought they were really funny. And, you know, for me, tragedy plus time and all that. And I thought, like, that was great. And it took the 4th issue before they finally let me put one in. Like, they fought every single one super hard. And I finally figured out a way to get it in there, you know? And it was like, and they were like, okay, that one's okay. Like, people aren't going to be upset about that one. And in fact, no one was upset. And it was a good joke. It was a good joke.
So there are some things that you can't make a joke of in polite company that are even older than the Mongols.
For example?
Jesus.
People make jokes about Jesus all the time.
Yes, but certain people will get offended no matter what.
That's going to be true no matter about anything. We're talking about bigger groups of people. Like, of course, there's always going to be someone who's upset. I mean, we live in Portland. I mean, there's someone who's going to be upset about anything.
You could say that about anywhere.
Of course, but more so in Portland than not. Don't defend Portland in terms of that.
I'm going to have to disagree.
What?
Now, this is getting pretty localized.
Yeah, we are.
But Jonathan is referring to, like,
You know what I'm referring to.
Yeah, it's among the places that would have the most what people would call SJWs in the world.
That is correct. Social justice warriors for people who are...
But it's also the most... But there's the fewest people would get offended by the Jesus jokes, though. In
of course.
Because it's like the most atheistic city in the world,
100%. But we had people in this city get offended and even try and shut down. For example, food carts and restaurants of certain cuisines that were not being made by the people who... of that country,
right.
They're like calling it cultural appropriation,
all I'm saying is
craziness.
Yes, I agree.
I just want a good gyro. I don't care who makes it. Just give me a good gyro, baby.
I agree. I don't care if it's a Greek person making the gyro. I agree.
No one should care about that. Go on.
We don't have to get on that.
Too late.
Doorstep. But I think you're only seeing it this one way because you're close to it. Like you can talk about I don't know, what's some large city in the South that is like super religious and you might look at it the other way.
Of course. Yes. So
why are you saying Portland is more that way?
Portland has a strong concentration of people who often get offended by many things that a lot of other people do not get offended by. True or false?
I think it's a loud minority.
Okay.
Yeah.
But a bigger minority than almost any other city is going to have of those people.
But you could make Jesus jokes.
That's not what I'm saying.
But you're not listening to what I'm saying.
I'm totally hearing what you're saying.
Okay.
Of course you can make Jesus jokes and piss off certain other groups in other cities.
Yeah.
Yes, of course I agree with that. Obviously that's true. But Portland is an example of one of the cities where that's going to be more true than for many other cities. I don't see how you can agree.
What I'm saying is you're going to get an equivalent or more people pissed off in the religious cities than you are in Portland overall by jokes on both sides.
Fine.
So that's all I was saying.
Great. Cool. I don't know why we had to do this. Why do we have to go down this path?
You made us.
No, you made us. You made us. This is entirely your fault. And I know all the listeners agree.
You know whose fault it is?
Yes.
Jesus.
Oh, I didn't know you were going to say that.
Yeah.
See, you can make Jesus jokes.
At least a small percentage of the listeners were probably offended by that.
No, if they were, it's going to keep happening. So just know that.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead. Enough. Let's get out of this horrible cul-de-sac we've been trapped in.
No, let's do more, man.
It was going fine for a while.
Talking about business hats.
Yeah, that was great.
That's how we got here.
I thought I came up with the idea of business hats when I first said it. I thought that was a brand new idea, but then you were right. Of course, Al Capone and Company used to wear businessy hats.
It feels like, you know, I don't really know how old business hats are. They go back to like maybe 1880 or so, and then up to like 1940, something like that.
I mean, I don't know.
Like, were they wearing business hats in 1800?
First of all, I don't know where you're getting 1940 from. Like, when JFK didn't wear a hat is when everyone realized they didn't have to wear hats. So until then, all men wore hats all the time.
All right, so 1960 then.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So, good. And I don't know, where did you get 1880 from?
That one I'm not sure of.
Oh, so you just invented
that? There's like a starting point of the business hat.
Probably,
Genghis Khan wasn't wearing the freaking business hat.
Right. Maybe. Oh, he wore a helmet. Maybe for him that was. That is actually,
You know what? That's
yeah. Military isn't a good example, though. They always have to wear hats.
Yeah, that's not a business hat. A business hat is unnecessary accoutrement.
Yeah, and you're like a businessman.
Yeah.
So in the... I mean, let's not do this anymore. We could do this. I mean, come on. What are we doing?
We're doing business hats. What do you think we're doing?
This is the time when I apologize to the listeners. Not all listeners. Just you know who you are. Those guys.
Yeah.
We're sorry to you.
Yeah.
Everyone else, you know, welcome along. And we're glad to have you for the ride. We usually don't go into this level of whatever the hell we just did.
But, you know, that's the thing about this show.
Yeah.
It could be anything.
I hope it was entertaining. Was it entertaining?
I don't know.
I'm really not sure.
This is the deal, man. This is why it's pure. You just let it happen.
Right. It is like hanging out with us, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I don't know about those other podcast hosts and what they're doing, but like, if you were just sitting here and we weren't recording, you might have heard the same thing. Like, that conversation might have gone almost exactly the same way. We're almost word for word, right?
The only difference is we had to grab all the material from whatever randomness came out of your mouth in the opening, which would have not happened.
Right, that's true.
Yeah.
That is true. But that's it.
Yeah.
And, you know, certainly we could have started talking about business hats anyway.
So we got the Mongols, we got business hats, we got Jesus.
Portland.
We got SJWs.
Portland versus other cities. How disagreeable the populace is, essentially.
Yeah.
That was a lot. Good work.
Yeah.
A lot of good work there. We didn't even touch on the feuds with the players in the hand.
Oh, right, because Negreanu and Berkey are in this hand. I guess
they both hate us.
That draws us closer to the hand.
They do not hate
us. And I would guess that most listeners would be like, what do you mean Negreanu hates you?
Negreanu does not hate us.
Berkey might actually hate us.
It's possible Berkey hates us. I don't know. Hate is a strong word.
Yeah.
I would guess he doesn't feel great about us. Maybe I'm wrong.
He makes like a face when he thinks about
us. It's like, poker guy. Like that, yeah.
He's a pirate.
Yeah, a little bit of a pirate.
You're referring to Negreanu, like, just we interviewed him and then he didn't like what happened.
Yes. So, like, after we did the Negreanu interview, like, in 2016, he said some
inflammatory things.
Thank you.
About Helmuth and about Mattisau.
Right. And so we were like, hey, Daniel, we're just going to take some of these inflammatory things that you did and like do press releases about them because we want to like draw attention. And he was very much against that. We did not do it then.
No,
like,
of course,
we showed him what we were going to do, but he didn't like that. I don't think he has any dislike of us. He probably doesn't even remember us. He does this shit every time.
Yeah.
He does this. I'm sure he has no idea who we are at this point. But he was actually very friendly to us leading up to that too and did a lot of nice things for us. So I don't think he has any issue with this at all.
No. So you just made that up.
Yeah, it's fun to say that.
You're just like every other podcast host, just fucking lying about the magnitude of
It's all about the clicks.
Yeah.
Clickety click click click. Yeah, that's why we have to have more of it. We gotta escalate this Berkey feud for more clicks.
It's kind of died down to embers, you know? There hasn't been any activity recently.
Well, this podcast will do something if we make fun of him enough and say he did a bad enough thing. Because I'll tell you what. I know he's listening to this one.
he might have stopped by now.
He might have. Probably not.
Like how many times does he have to listen to know that you're going to say something disparaging about his play? Like, he doesn't care anymore. Well, he probably
does. Yeah, he doesn't care anymore. That's believable.
I guess he cared before.
He cared a huge amount before.
Yeah.
Almost a weird amount, I would say,
for someone
he thought, anyway, it doesn't matter. Let's not do it. Anyway, we don't actually have any issue with Matt Berkey, except for the fact that he has an issue with us, I think is fair to say, right?
Correct.
At least for me. Grant likes to say he really likes Matt Berkey. I wouldn't go that far for myself, but I certainly don't have an issue with him in any way.
I don't like how he reacted to his play being criticized.
Yeah, I don't either.
But when I've met him and hung out and been in the same spot with him and stuff, he was a friendly guy. It was nice to be around.
100%. Yeah. Super friendly. Super friendly. And when he did that interview with us, actually, he was super cool too.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough. Let's do this.
Okay. $200-$400 game.
Okay, fine.
This was suggested by Leo Chen on Discord. That's sure. a great place to suggest hands. There's even a place called Suggest Hands that you can go, and that's pretty easy to figure out. You can also do it on Twitter. We're the Poker Guys on Twitter.
Leo Chen's making a nice little run for like potential all-star selection with his suggestions lately. He's doing a good job.
Good for him.
Yeah.
You know, Andrew Wiggins, all-star.
Right, and, you know, wants a max contract extension now.
Yeah,
and may get it.
Yeah, well, now we're doing basketball.
Real crazy. Yeah, okay, right. We're doing this other
thing. All right, so Leo Chen suggested, please suggest hands. We like hands.
Please.
That's the whole podcast revolves around hands and also us talking randomly about stuff. All right, so $200-$400 cash game. Daniel Negreanu is on the button. It has folded to him. He's got 10-6 of spades and $90,000.
Yeah.
He opens to 1K. That seems fine.
It does, especially in light, even more so with our last podcast we did with Matt Matros, where he was talking about how you're just supposed to open so much suited stuff, especially.
I mean, he was even talking about under the gun, because we...
I know.
We were referring to this hand, Jason Kuhn opening under the gun. It was probably not nine-handed, it was probably eight or seven-handed, but he opened under the gun with 10-7 of clubs, and Matros was like, oh yeah, definitely.
No, actually what he said was 10-8 is definite, and 10-7 is close, and he's not sure. He doesn't know, but... I think we'd all assume if Kuhn's doing it, probably is fine, right?
Yeah.
But that's shocking to me that that could be fine.
Right.
So anyway, 10-6 suited on the button. Like, sure.
I would have never questioned this open on the button.
Right.
There's
No, I wouldn't either.
So Berkey is in the small blind. Hey, let's start questioning plays.
Yes.
Jonathan gets
to
question.
Are we going to question a Matt Berkey play?
I know you are. I know you don't like this play.
You don't know anything yet.
I saw this play happen. I was like, I definitely like that play better than Jonathan does. Jonathan is not going to like that play.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Berkey has 54,000 in his stack.
Yeah.
He's the effective stack between the two. He has queen 10 off, queen of spades, 10 of clubs in the small blind, and he's going to flat.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Do your thing, Levy.
Well, here's the question I have, actually. The first question is, do we think we're ever getting a 3-bet through when Negreanu opens the button? It feels like not very often, right?
He's going to have some hands he folds.
He has to have some, but...
He's going to have, like, offsuit king high type hands.
He's not, like, folding this hand, right?
Probably not, unless maybe we make it like 5,500.
We're never making it 5,500. Like, we're going to make it 4,000, right?
Probably.
And he's going to call. It's because he's Daniel Negreanu, he's on the button, and we're barely deep enough that he's like, I mean, we're really not, but my guess is he's just not going to fold 10-6. Maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe he would.
But
because Berkey only has 54K?
So stack to pot is already not great for this hand. I would be concerned that we aren't getting enough folds out of Daniel, that a 3-bet may not be good, and then this is a pretty bad hand to do it with. If we're not getting any folds.
So then I guess the question becomes, is it a call or a fold?
That's right. That's the next question.
To me, it's an obvious call if those are the only two options.
I think it's a fine call. I don't know if I agree that it's obvious, but I think it's fine.
So something we've talked about recently, actually you brought it up in a recent hand we did with Garrett against Jackie, when Garrett 3-bet the king jack of spades out of the small blind. Was the depolarization of range in cash games because people aren't folding to 3-bets. So you just kind of like 3-bet for value with pretty good hands.
Yes. Right?
King Jack of Spades was fit the bill. It was good enough.
Yep.
I don't know if Queen 10 off does fit the bill.
I don't think it does.
So folding just feels like incredibly nitty and wrong. And, you know, this is a hand that plays reasonably well post-flop against a range that we're doing okay against.
I don't know if I agree that it's nitty and wrong. I'm not sure. If he had folded this, I wouldn't think, like, what the hell is he doing? I guess you would. I really wouldn't
think that. I wouldn't think, what the hell is he doing? I'm just trying to figure out what's the best of the options.
I mean, playing out of position with a hand that isn't suited is, you know, can get us in some trouble. We are up against the button range, which is good, of course. If we were in the big blind, we'd always call. This is the thing that I have to come back to is, like if we're in the big blind, we're 100% calling.
Of course. Hand,
right? So...
With some 3-bets mixed in, probably, if we're going to mix.
Maybe a little bit of that, sure. But so, like, that's only $100 more. Now, granted, the big blind's still the act, so we're letting that guy in, and we don't close the action, and they now can sometimes squeeze, like Dan Smith in the big blind. He probably is squeezing sometimes.
Yeah.
This is not a hand we can continue with if he squeezes.
No.
So we sort of, like, open ourselves up to that play a little bit, too. But probably you're right that when all is said and done, this can be a fine call, and that's that. You know, probably you're right.
If you're looking to depolarize your range in a cash game that plays the way that we're describing, where people just aren't folding the 3-bets, what's the, against the button open, what's the cutoff of hands that you 3-bet for value depolarized?
I'm wondering if we can, I think we could probably get away with Queen Jack suited.
And King 10 suited?
Yeah. Those are the two.
Yeah.
That to me are the seem feel like the floor. What do you think?
What about King 10 off?
I don't want to, man. I feel like because all the worst kings are going to fold. And we don't, and like off is really
suited,
different
the
than suited.
Ones will call in these types of
yeah,
scenarios.
Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it with King 10 off. King 10 off is pretty ugly.
So you're going to fold King 10 off and call with Queen 10 off? Or you're going to call with King 10 off too?
Right. Ugh. I mean, I'm probably going to, right, if we think they're always calling the three bet, so we can't get it through.
I mean, they're not opening always,
a
lot. But
yeah, yeah, some ridiculously high percentage of the time they're calling the three bets. So we don't think we have enough fold equity to make this, and we don't want to turn it into a bluff and do any of that. I guess we mostly have to call with King 10 off in the small blind. I don't like it. I don't like calling with Queen 10 off in the small blind either, but I don't think it's crazy. I think it's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, I think folding just is like too nitty. Maybe I'm wrong.
I feel it. I mostly don't want to call here. My internal self, I mean, but like as we talk it through, I really feel that there's logic to calling. Don't get me wrong. But like
you're conditioned through like
yeah.
5 years of the metagame telling you that you have to three bet out of the small blind if you're going to enter the pot.
Well, also, these are not hands you really like calling with. Like, if someone opened in middle position, I wouldn't call with these hands
no.
if I hadn't put any money in. So why am I calling out of position with these hands? Because I have $100 in there already? Like, or $200
it's
in there
because
already?
Because of the range of the opener.
Yeah.
That is why.
Yeah, that is why. That's true. It's crappy, though. I mean, hate it. I want to just fold.
I know.
I think I would just fold.
When we're talking about Berkey and Negreanu, it wouldn't be reasonable for Berkey to assume he had any sort of large edge, right? Even though maybe he does, but he probably doesn't think that he has a large edge over Negreanu.
I doubt it.
Right. So
I don't know. He may think he's like streets ahead against all these players.
He might. I don't know. But my point is what I'm trying to get to is something about the discussion with Matros kind of opened something up for me mentally, which is like. Kind of the Mizrahi feeling of like, maybe I should just be playing so many hands when I'm at these tables. And if I'm playing 1-2
right.
or 5-5 or something, and it's like, these people don't really know what they're doing. Like, why would I not put money in the pot when we're deep, when we can play post-flop
yes.
with a hand that, like, why not expand the amount of combos? Like,
yes.
Add combos to my playing, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point. Okay, my guess is that Berkey thinks, without knowing, of course, he thinks he probably is ahead of Negreanu in terms of at least in terms of certain mechanics of the game.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true. I actually doubt it's true.
It doesn't matter. It only matters what he perceives.
Right. I'm just saying for the Daniel Negreanu stands out there, like, right. I'm not saying Berkey is this way. I'm just saying, but I think he probably does perceive it that way. He probably thinks he's right on the cutting edge of a lot of this stuff. And truth be told, he does a lot of things that, at least in the past, I don't understand what the fuck he's
yeah.
doing. I don't know if he does either, but I certainly don't. So then that, maybe you're right. Maybe that part of it is just like, I'm looking to play pots here. I remember there was a poker after dark hand, cash game hand. Negreanu opened the cutoff and Phil Galfond was on the button. They were deep as hell. He called with King 8 off on the button.
Yes. Yes, that's right.
Right. And it was clearly just, we're deep. I have position and I think I'm better than you are. Right. And he did get good value with King 8.
It may not even be that he thinks he's better. It's just that he thinks
I think I'm good enough.
And range wise, this hand is good in this spot against your range.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just interesting. Like, I remember being shocked that Phil Galfond called there. Even now, it's sort of crazy to think that he called with King 8 off.
Yeah.
I remember Negreanu was like trying to figure out what hands was beating him, and he came up with a whole bunch and then called, and he's like, oh, or King 8. Yeah, yeah. King 8 beats me too. And he's clearly was like, what the hell is happening? How can you have King 8? You
know? Yeah. Speaking of King 8, that's also a hand that we were like trying to pick Matros's brain about what the actual under the gun opening range is in his opinion.
Yeah.
Because we're like, oh, 10-7 suited is actually a candidate. That's a bit of a surprise. Like, you wouldn't open like King 4 suited, and is what I asked him. And he said, no, I wouldn't open King 4 suited. But King 8, yeah, King 8 suited is probably an open.
Which also seemed crazy
yeah.
to me.
Like what?
Under the gun, nine handed? Jeez. It wouldn't. It's so far away from my world to like consider that. Like, King 10 suited, of course. That's where I start. Although I will say, like, I was looking, like, yesterday I played after, and it was the day after this conversation that we had with him, and I was like, let's go with King 9 suited here, baby. You know, and I played more hands like that a little bit, you know, and that was cool.
And, you know, philosophically, it's one of those philosophies that I just want to like get behind without actually examining it much because it's more fun. It's like, oh, I get to play more hands and I can, it's theoretically correct to do it too. Cool.
I mean, we're also, and it is important to point out that, Matros was saying that he's looking at it from a tournament point of view,
yes,
which matters because there's no rake in tournaments. Now, in Portland, where we play, there's also no rake.
Yeah.
You play a daily fee, a door fee, and that's it. But if you're playing cash anywhere else, playing all these hands the way we're talking about is a huge mistake because the rake will eat you alive.
Yes, that
is. So you have to play. You want to play less hands when there's rake. Like, see, you generally less than your opponents.
So the lesson is move to Portland if you want to do this in cash games.
Right, or just play tournament. Play like this in tournaments.
Or if you're playing high enough, you can. And you're paying time, then.
Oh yeah, time makes it so it's not a problem anyway. Then it doesn't matter.
Right, it's all fine.
Yep. Anyway.
Anyway, so Berkey does flat out of the small blind with the queen 10 off.
I certainly don't hate it.
It's my preferred action.
Yeah.
Is it your preferred action after we talked
I don't think it is. I think I still want to fold.
Fold?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I want a three-better fold more than I want to call, but I really am okay with calling. And I may even experiment with that myself, like against certain opponents, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird.
I don't know. This seems fine. Dan Smith is in the big blind. He has 69,000. He has 8-3 of clubs. He's closing the action. He makes the call.
He's always calling.
Might fold 8-3 off, but...
He's definitely folding.
Yeah. But 8-3 of clubs, he calls.
Yeah.
The pot is $3,400.
Okay.
Nitro betting is...
It's your...
World.
Father. Let's try it again. Let's go a different word this time.
Okay.
Okay. Nitro betting is your...
Gandalf. Pool time.
You said Gandalf?
Yeah.
I said pool time.
Perfect.
Okay.
All right, so I guess that's the ad.
Yep.
Back to the action.
Grant and I have shown that we really are on the same wavelength, though.
Yeah.
Let's try, okay, without saying that, on three, let's just see if we can say the same word. Any word in the English language, you ready?
Yeah.
I'm going to go 1, 2, 3, and then we'll say it, okay? You ready? I got my word. 1, 2, 3.
Cottage.
Dirt ball. We did it.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Nitro betting.
Yep.
They got pool time. They got Gandalf. They got cottage. They got dirt ball. They got it all.
They got it all.
Which these could all be names of poker variants. I don't know. There's a ton of weird poker variants out there.
Dirt ball's got to be the name of a poker variant.
For sure. Yeah. Gandalf probably too.
Yeah.
You know?
Probably.
Yeah.
That's messed up, man. But I just realized that if we had actually said the same word, no one would have believed it.
Nope.
It would have been like one of the craziest things that ever happened.
Yeah.
And no one would have believed. They would all thought we had like arranged it, you know?
Yeah.
That would really be ridiculous. Anyway.
I wonder what some hack psychologist would say about the words we came up with when we were given the choice to choose any word.
Oh, I could tell you all about these guys. These guys have got real issues with their parents and their...
Just go read The Interpretation of Dreams and smoke 80 cigars, Freud. You know,
nice.
Get over
strong,
it. Get over yourself. Anyway, this is a nitro betting ad.
Oh, yeah.
Freud is dead, so he's not going to be able to use the link
in
the
description. Plus time.
It's funny now because he died. But you didn't, not yet. And that's why you should use the link in Nitro Betting to Nitro Betting in our description there, because that link gets you access to all of the Poker Guys promotional shit, which is good stuff, man.
It's really good stuff, man. But Grant's...
Yeah.
Man.
What would Freud say about the way you just mimicked me?
He would say, you are sexually attracted to your mother.
Yeah, he always says that. Yeah, that's the only thing he says.
Kind of lands on that a lot.
Yeah, that's all he has. That's his only move. But at the time, everybody was like blown away.
They were like, that is insightful. I am hot for my mom.
But you won't be on Nitro Betting. It's a guarantee.
No incest is encouraged, or even will you want to do it? All your incest goes away. We wipe it away on Nitro.
Nitro Betting wrote this ad for us, by the way.
Yeah, that's right. It's totally approved by the Nitro Betting marketing department.
We're reading
Don't
it
worry
word for
about
word.
It. Boy, you could probably cut this one up and many of the other ones up into some pretty tough ads for Nitro Betting.
Yes, you could. Yes, you could. Anyway, it's a great site.
It really is.
They have the Poker Guys monthly tournament. They have sports betting. They have casino games. Even if you sign up for Nitrogen Sports in the past, you got to re-sign up to get access to all the promotional stuff.
Yeah, so definitely do that.
And we'll see you on Nitro Betting.
Okay.
With Gandalf and Dirtbag and all of them.
All the different things.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Hey, I want to talk real quick about all the crazy variants of poker.
Okay.
Just real quick, because it's fun.
Yeah,
you know, this is poker related, before we get back to the hand. So in Portland, we've probably mentioned this briefly on the podcast before, but the culture in Portland cash games now is that, like, in some of the games, twice per orbit, there's a bomb pot, which is where everybody puts in a certain amount of money, and then everybody sees the flop, and then you start betting, right?
Yep.
But playing that hold'em is not even close to what we're doing at this point. It's like the the level of gamble of these people is so absurd that there's so many variants of poker. Like there's a shit show. Do you know what shit show is?
Isn't that where you get like 10 cards?
You get 5 cards, like PLO.
Know what this is.
Yeah.
There are 10 there's 10 cards on the board.
But there
right?
but then it's 10 cards on the board.
It's 6-2-2,
yeah,
right?
The flop is 6 cards and so then like
come on,
and
man.
It's a bomb pot. Like that type of shit's going on. It's crazy.
I mean, that's absolutely bizarre.
Yeah. There's tic-tac-toe.
Yep.
Where you play 8 different ways.
Yep, they put up a board.
And you do highest, high, lowest, low, I think, wins.
Yeah.
It's like the stuff that people come up with is absurd. There's a game called Amnesia.
Oh, I don't know this one.
Which is, you know, it's among the most vanilla of the games to start with, which is just you get 5 cards, you play PLO with your 5 cards, high only, and there's 2 boards in the bomb pot, and it's a split pot game between the boards. But as the turn comes, the flops are turned over.
Come
on. So you have to remember the flop.
That's really
And then when the
ridiculous.
River comes, the turns are turned over.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I've seen where they play a mystery board. So they go double board, but one of the boards is down the whole way and like play like highest, high, lowest, low. And so everyone's only betting with half the board, but half the pot, and maybe the whole pot is going to go based on the other board. And I mean, it's bizarre.
There's also a mystery game, which is the worst one of all.
Oh my God.
Which is where there's 3 games picked at random and all games where you get a 5-card hand and there's 2 boards and you don't know until the last round of betting is complete at the end, which game you were playing.
I mean, so it's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, we think like we've been talking and having fun with Texaha lately, yeah. which is where you get 6 cards and you put 2 cards as a hold'em hand, 4 cards as an Omaha hand, and they can never the twain shall meet. And it's a split pot game, and they put 1 board up. And yeah. that's a complicated,
That's a fun,
crazy,
complicated
interesting
game. But a lot of the ones I mentioned are not fun. They're just
right.
like, they're just like weird, dumb
You can't
games.
Have games where there's too much concealed information, like the Amnesia game.
I mean, you can. Deuce to 7 single draw is a game that people play.
Not very popularly.
Yeah, that's
How
true.
Often do you... like?
There are bracelet events of it.
Right. There's yeah. bracelet events of everything, though. Like
there's not a shit show.
Great point, Grant. Yeah. But come on, they've been playing Deuces. They've been playing Deuces 7 forever.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a real game. But like, essentially, concealed information games are not very like you're not going to get a lot of people wanting to play those, right? Because you learn very quickly that, for example, there's a game called Tomaha where you get 4 cards like Omaha, but you play 3 cards from your hand instead of 2,
and 2 cards from the board.
And 2 cards from the board. You have to do that. First of all, people screw that up constantly. Second of all, it means essentially at any time. All quads are available.
Yep.
Straight flushes are often available, and you can't see it.
Yep.
So what happens though is it ends up playing very tight
mm-hmm.
because you can't go. You can't lose your mind. You're just going to get destroyed if you lose your mind, right? So even if you have like bottom quads, if someone's giving you a lot of action, you could be fucked like really easily.
Yeah.
Right. Like if you put in a lot of money with top full house, you're probably a fish in that game.
Yep.
You know. So like. It just what it creates is like not a lot of interest in,
yep.
in that game ultimately, as opposed to games where that's one of the beauties about Hold'em is you can see enough, and mm-hmm. even Omaha, you can see enough to understand what's possible and what isn't. What is the nuts?
Yeah,
I mean, of course you can do that with these concealed games too, but it's more reasonable.
But the nuts are always like a super strong hand in those games,
right? It could be super weak or super strong, as opposed to like, oh, the third flush card came, so now I know the nut flush is the nuts if
yeah.
someone has that, and like. I can be aware of that, and that's how likely that is. You have a sense of that, as opposed to these other things.
I mean,
things
in Omaha, you can have multiple flush types, right? You can have spades and hearts be flushes.
Absolutely.
You know, which is,
yeah, easily.
Which is dumb.
Super dumb.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm sure that happens all the time. So you could have the nut flush and lose to a better nut flush.
Yeah.
You and you both have the ace high flush, but in different suits.
Right.
That happens constantly, I'm sure, in that game.
Yeah.
Like, so there's not a lot of energy for that kind of a game, though.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Right.
I would never play that game.
Right.
Those games do not interest me.
Texaha's fun, though.
It sure is.
Yeah.
I like that game. Anyway.
Anyway.
That was fun.
Let's go back to a reasonable game, No Limit Hold'em.
Hey, yes.
All right. So we've got Dan Smith, Matt Berkey, Daniel Negreanu. 10-6 of spades for Negreanu. Berkey's got
right.
queen 10 off. Dan Smith has 8-3 of clubs.
Okay. Let's get to the flop.
The pot is $3,400. The flop is 8 of diamonds, 9 of hearts, deuce of spades. A little something for everybody.
Really?
Negreanu and Berkey both flop gut shots. Berkey's with the 2 overs. And Dan Smith flops middle pair.
Yep.
Berkey checks, Smith checks.
Mm-hmm.
You want to argue for either of these guys to lead?
I think both of them could lead. I don't know if I may want to make a strong argument. Let's remember, Negreanu's opening from the button, Mm-hmm. He's going to have a wider range. This board is going to interact with him almost as much, actually maybe more than it would interact with Berkey's range even when he flats there.
Yeah.
Berkey has a lot of like queen, jack, king, queen type hands as we see. Mm-hmm. Negreanu really does have like eights and nines and sevens and seven, ten and all that stuff.
Berkey might be flatting some hands that make sets on this board other than deuces sometime.
He might, but not that often, right?
He does. He probably has 8-9 suited.
Yes, I believe he has 8-9 suited some of the time. He's 3-betting that some of the time, though. But sure, he can have it. But Negreanu has all the sets, has top two as well. Probably even 9-8 off. He certainly has 9-8 suited.
I think Negreanu should probably have 8-9 off.
So yeah. Negreanu's range is really strong here, is what I'm getting at. Plus, he's got all the overpairs.
The top end of his range is really strong, but his range is expansive. So as a
percentage
of his range...
Okay, like that's fair.
I wouldn't say his range is strong.
Okay. If we compare it, though, to, let's say, Dan Smith, I think Negreanu's got a stronger range than Dan Smith.
Well, he has the overpairs and the sets.
Right, and Dan Smith has a lot of crap.
Yeah.
Berkey's is a little more interesting, right? Berkey has... His flats really constrict his range. But because there isn't that much pocket nines, pocket eights in there, like he's just going to 3-bet that a fair amount of the time.
We would expect, but as you know, Berkey does things differently.
He does, but I certainly see him often be very aggressive pre-flop.
Yeah, he likes to lean aggressive.
I would be like, this is a surprise that he decided to flat the queen 10. I wouldn't have thought he'd be doing that often in this spot. And maybe he isn't. I don't know. I guess I understand why these guys are checking is what I'm ultimately in. But I still think they could reasonably bet, especially Dan Smith, once Berkey checks. Like, it's going to check through a lot, right? Like, a lot. And we often have the best hand. I mean, if we get action, we're still ahead because we can be ahead of, like, Queen Jack and Jack 10. And
yeah, I mean, there's some value Queen to be 10. Had. There's definitely equity denial.
That's what you'd be betting for. But it's okay to check and like assume it's going to check through a lot, and you get to bet on a lot of turns as Dan Smith.
I mean, 5 years ago, I would have never considered leading this hand as Dan Smith.
Yeah.
Would you? I don't think
so. No, but now I think it's something to think about. Maybe we want... I mean, then I think I like a check, though, from both these guys, ultimately, because Negreanu does slam this board when he slams it. Like, I think he does have the strongest range.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Negreanu's going to go ahead and bet once they both check, which makes sense.
Sure.
He's got 10 high. He's got the gut shot. He's got a backdoor spade flush draw.
Got the overcard.
He bets 2,200 into 3,400. Sized up a bit, maybe because it's a bit of a dynamic board, and he has two opponents rather than one.
Yes to both of those things. He has a range advantage, which is good, but not a massive one.
No.
Which maybe is a reason to size it up a little bit more, too. Like, the bigger your range advantage, the less you have to bet on the flop.
Yeah. Yep. So he bets 2,200.
Yep.
All right, Matt Berkey, what are you going to do?
I think he's got two options here.
Folding is not an option, clearly.
Right. I think calling is fine. I think raising is fine. I don't think you should always be raising or anything close to that. I can see why you'd want to raise a lot. If we raise, we can knock out Dan Smith almost always. That may open up some outs for us that don't currently exist. Not in this case, but if Dan Smith had, for example, 10-8.
Sure.
Or Queen 8 or something like that, we get to have those overcards back. We can take it down a lot right now. That would be great. If called, that's not so bad either. If re-raised, we can just fold because this hand isn't that good. So a raise is pretty cool. A call isn't bad, though. We're getting a pretty good price with a hand that seems to have a lot of outs.
Yeah.
So I think a call is okay, too.
Yeah.
What do you want to do? What do you prefer?
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with how I expect Negreanu's c-betting range to be constructed here.
Mm.
Like,
that's good.
We don't know the answer, but I would ask myself, is Negreanu betting this with things that don't interact with the board at all? Like, is he just going to take a shot here with ace-five of diamonds?
I doubt it. My guess is no.
It's got two back doors.
Well, that's fair. But like if he had king, queen off, like I don't think he'd just fire away.
So he's got to have at least something going on, you think?
Yeah. That's my guess. What do you think? By the way, three back doors with ace five.
Exciting.
So sexy.
Yeah.
Go that 6, 7, 8, 9 and make that bottom end of the straight. Let's do this.
Yeah, you want that.
I mean, sometimes you do.
I mean, it can help. It wouldn't work this time.
Oh.
Not this time.
Nice.
I have no idea if he's firing away with ace, queen in hands like that, but I would guess not.
I would guess not.
Yeah. So that like is a favor. That's a point in favor of calling versus raising because you have less fold equity. Like obviously fold equity is a major component of raising here. If you're Berkey, you need to have a reasonable amount of fold equity to make a raise make any sense at all, because you have queen high. It's not useful to get called. It's, I mean, sometimes you can bank something. That's great. But if you can't fold them out, it's not worth it. Of course, if Negreanu has ace five of diamonds, maybe he is betting a hand like that because he does have the back doors and he's definitely folding that to a raise. Maybe not if we were deeper, but at this stacked up, I think.
I think so.
So I don't know. I mean, like, I think it's super close between calling and raising.
I think both seem really fine to me. I think you should probably mix, right? Sometimes call, sometimes raise. And it's fine. And mix could even be around 50%. I'm sure there's a solver that, in fact, we will have a solver work done on this. Well, this is three-handed, but we can get rid of Dan Smith. He's not going to stick around. So the solver will tell us what it thinks. But I would think somewhere close to 50% seems pretty reasonable here. Like, sometimes we raise, sometimes we call. So you don't really know what I'm doing with this hand, you know? And you can't, it's harder to range me whichever action I take.
That makes it tough for me. It makes it tough for me to get to 50% because the way I would construct that range, I would want to call when I have a backdoor flush draw with it. So it would require it to be one of three combos of queen 10 suited and raise when I don't have the backdoor flush draw. So I need to only have three other combos of queen 10 unsuited in order to make that 50-50.
Okay, sure. That's fair, I guess. You could also think about like what unblocks Negron, what blocks or unblocks his backdoors a little bit.
Yeah.
So you could like, if we unblock his back doors, we could be a little less interested in raising. And if we block his back doors, we'd be a little more interested in raising.
Yeah.
These are very minor.
It's like very small little things.
I think any version of that, if you're doing 25% raise and 75% call or vice versa, it's fine too.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, Berkey goes with raise.
Fine.
6,500 over Negreanu's 2,200.
Cool.
What do you think about the sizing?
I like it. I think Negreanu is going to have some auto folds. This hand is an interesting candidate, by the way, to auto fold here. I'm curious to see what he decides to do. This also is going to, as we said, knock out a bunch of Dan Smith's range. In fact, the best hand, it's going to knock that out.
Yep.
Like, how is Dan Smith going to be able to continue?
So I think this is interesting about Berkey, and I think he has proven in the past that he kind of lives up to this, but in order to raise here reputably, you're going to have a wider value range, right? If you're going to raise queen 10 here.
You almost have to have, like, ace nine suited. And
I think he does.
I think he does too.
Yeah. So that's good for him.
I agree. He absolutely can have good one pair of hands here.
Yeah. Which is, you kind of need to if you're going to raise this
hand. He would have had to call pre with ace nine suited, which I bet he does at least some of the time if he's calling this hand. And then he needs to raise it, which I bet he does some of the time.
He
if
might
he's
raise
raising
this nine
hand.
10 suited, which he could probably call pre flop.
I think he's probably raising a bunch of his top pairs. I agree with you.
So any nine he has, he might raise.
Yeah. Like not always, but a bunch of the time. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
To allow him to raise hands like this.
Yep. It's cool. That, I have to say, it's really cool.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's really going to bite you in the butt, but it's an interesting, creates a whole set of problems for a thinking player.
Yes, it does. So Dan Smith with his middle pair and the best hand folds.
Yes, of course he does.
All right, so you were wondering what Negreanu should do. So what do you think? It's back to you, closing the action. No Dan Smith anymore.
All right, let's do some math. So the pot is going to have, we're going to have 8,700 to what's already in the pot. That's 90. It's like 12-1. In fact, it's $12,100 right now. It's 4,300 to call. And how deep is Berkey? How much does Berkey have left is my question.
Like 48K?
Yeah, 47 maybe. 4,000 to win like, if we win it all, like 59. So it's almost 15-1. I guess we can call. Because we're actually going to bang it on the turn 1 out of 11 times anyway. Like, so we're getting the right pure odds. Assume we can get it all from Berkey if we hit it, but it's going to be really hidden. So he could have like top two and just absolutely.
Yeah, but it is
off.
Also a bit of a problem straight draw.
Yep, because if Jack 10 is out
Berkey
there.
Yeah, Berkey could have Jack 10 very easily.
Yep. And clearly he played Jack 10 like this at least some of the time. He's playing Queen 10 like this. That is a great point. If we're up against Jack 10, we are in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, that should be going through Negreanu's head.
We also have a backdoor spade draw. I mean, this has got to be one of the worst hands we ever bet on this flop, right?
Yeah.
This is an awful hand. We could comfortably throw this away. I think we're supposed to throw this away because of the Jack 10 problem.
Maybe. I mean, having the backdoor spade draw is tempting.
Yeah.
We're going to have a backdoor draw with this hand, though, 75% of the time. We're probably not going to open 10-6 off on the button.
We don't get there. A backdoor draw comes in like 4% of the time or 3% of the time.
But
I mean,
it gives
it's nice.
It emboldens you on the turn to do stuff.
It does. No, that's absolutely true. There's a playability thing there for sure. But I'm just saying, like, it's you're, like you're saying, that you're just going to have a lot of back doors. Like if you're playing suited hands, you have a lot of back doors, which is cool, but also can get you in lots of trouble if you're like, well, I can call this raise that I otherwise wouldn't have called just because of it. I think this should just be like, if it, everything is essentially super close, this can push us over the top. I don't think it should be, I wasn't going to call, but now I am, you know, for something like this, for this, not even a nut backdoor draw.
So you want to fold?
I think I want to fold. What do you want to do?
I don't know, man. The Jack 10 thing does suck.
It really sucks.
But if we as Negreanu believe that Berkey is raising a lot of one pair hands here,
we have to believe that.
That's good.
Yep.
That's good for this hand. Mm-hmm. You know, that means we're not in trouble as often when the seven comes because Jack 10 makes up a smaller swath of Berkey's range than it would from a more traditional raise range. So that's good. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yep. That's true.
I don't know. I don't know. I think I would end up calling because I have position in the back door, like when I was sitting there. But if I thought about it a long time with the Jack 10 stuff, I might fold anyway, even though Berkey's got a wider range.
I mean, another problem is not only is Jack 10 got us in real trouble if a seven comes, like we're screwed.
Yeah.
But like our overcard is covered by Jack 10, by Queen 10, and by 9-10.
Yeah.
Those are all pretty good candidates to raise, knowing Berkey's raising range some of the time. Like his value range here is, or not value range, but 9-10 really might be part of his value raising range here.
Yes, it might.
And that's so like you can't like count on that overcard the way you might be able to against other opponents more of the time. So that isn't great either. That makes me want to fold a little more.
Yeah.
I mean, that's always a danger, of course, but it feels like it's a, since he can have 9-10 and do this, when most players can't, that changes things a little bit for me.
Yeah, I think it's close. Negreanu ends up calling because he's Daniel Negreanu.
Yeah, he's obviously not going to fold. He's this massive station.
Yeah, he's calling. He calls.
Yeah.
What do you think?
100%.
Yeah, you fools thought he was going to fold.
That was dumb.
Yeah. 16,400 in the pot.
Okay.
Eight of diamonds, deuce of spades, nine of hearts. Negreanu's got 10, six of spades. Berkey's got queen 10 off. The turn is the five of spades, bringing in the backdoor flush draw for Negreanu. So he now has the two draws.
That's a good card.
Yep. It's a pretty damn good card. It does complete 6-7.
It does. We block that, though.
We could rep that if we want to, isn't it, right?
Yes, we can.
Yeah. All right. Do you want to keep going if you're Matt Berkey?
Yes.
Okay, that was a quick answer. Let's hear the reasoning.
Because I don't really know what else to do at this point if I'm Matt Berkey. Like, I guess
yes,
I can,
please. Let me
I can check fold. Look at what Negreanu actually called our check raise with. This means he's got a huge amount of calls on the flop that we can easily move. Now, not this hand, because he picked up spades, but think about all the other hands that are just going to have to fold when we bet on the turn. Like, I think if we check raise this against Daniel Negreanu, who's often only betting if he interacts with the board in some way on the flop anyway, and as we see, he's calling with this hand. If it's not a multi-street plan, I don't know why we're check raising. Like, it's we shouldn't think we're going to get it through that often on the flop.
Yeah. Yeah. The issue being that we don't have 6-7, and that's part of Negreanu's range.
Yep. That is the issue. But we still have a draw to the nuts.
Yeah.
And overs.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. All right. Well, Berkey's going to bet.
I think he's supposed to.
I think he probably is, too. It becomes a tricky spot now.
I mean, you know, if we get raised, it's easy. It's only if Negreanu calls that it gets tricky, really. Like, everything else is easy.
Well, let's hope he doesn't call then.
Well, the problem is Daniel Negreanu really likes to call.
He does. He loves it.
But this hand, maybe he won't, Grant. Wouldn't this be wild if Negreanu just moves in and Berkey snap calls with Queen High? He's like, I think I'm good here. That'd be incredible.
He's like Stu Unger, man.
Yeah.
It's like, I call you.
I put you on 10-6 exactly. Or Jack 10. I put you on Jack 10.
No, Stu Unger called with 10 high because he put the guy on 4-5, right?
I think that's right.
Yeah.
And was right.
Yeah.
Unlike Tom Dwan, who's never right when he does that. 0-2, buddy.
Yeah.
Anyway,
all right. So Berkey bets 10K into 16-4.
Yep.
Negreanu still just has the gut shot. Oh, excuse me. My voice cracked. It does not make it a double gutter, even though when I first looked at this hand, I was like, he has a double gutter now, because I'm an idiot.
Yes.
No, still just the same gut shot.
Right.
He needs a 7.
Okay.
So Berkey has bet 10K. He's got 37K back. The pot is $26,400 after Berkey's bet.
Yeah.
What do you want to do as Negreanu?
Okay, my first inclination is to put the money in all of it right now.
Yeah.
There's a few reasons why. Number one.
Do you have any? You just went blank.
I don't know what happened there. It's just like everything stopped working for a second. Number one.
Hit yourself in the head a few times like,
that
in,
was
a
weird.
Like in a movie.
That happens to humans, I guess. So I said there were a couple reasons why.
Now you have to come up with more than one reason.
I can think of one right now, but okay. Well, one reason is because we have 10 high and we don't get there that often, right? Like we have 12 outs.
Yeah.
It actually turns out a 6 is good if we hit it, but like we would not think that, and we're going to get bluffed off that really easy on the river. Mm-hmm. So that's one. Two is that I guess we're not in a spot where we're ever going to show down this hand, like as 10 high, right? If like we may get called, but like if we call here and Berkey were to check any river, we're not just going to check back with 10 highs because we don't have to worry about being up against Jack 10 or Queen 10, for example, like he has, and have it go check on the river and let's lose because that would be awful.
Yeah.
So I assume we're not going to let that happen, but we only get there 25% of the time or something with our 12 outs. We've got to have some fold equity here. Like I can think of hands that Berkey can absolutely fold, especially because his raising range is thinner than a lot of other players. Is he going to call top pair if we shove here? I don't know that he's going to do that. And here's the other thing. We've done a bunch of Berkey hands, as Matt Berkey can attest, and he makes a lot of tight folds, a lot. Like, I mean, I think he thinks them through, don't get me wrong, and I don't, like, hate his folds, but he's definitely on the tighter side once someone shows aggression. In this way, it looks like Negreanu may have a set of nines or a set of eights or 6-7 very easily, and he's going to fold. I mean, he's calling with his, like, you know, sets.
Yeah.
But I don't know how many sets he really has, but he's calling with them. If he has top two, I guess he's calling. I'm not even 100% sure. We've seen him fold.
If he has 6-7, he's calling.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Well, we have outs against that, though. We get there, you know, we actually beat it 25% of the time if he has 6-7.
Yeah.
It's actually not so bad. Well, a little less because one of the sevens is dead.
Right.
But still, that's pretty good considering that's pretty unlucky since we block it, right?
Yeah.
We block the nuts. We can absolutely have the nuts. He's got a thinner value range than most, and he makes tight folds. All this says to me, and we only get there 25% of the time, all this says to me, let's move in right now with by the way, the right stack size to do it.
Yeah, the things that I would say on the other side of it, although I do agree with a lot of what you said, is Berkey could absolutely have 6-7.
Of course he can.
Which sucks. You know, that's too bad. Also, are we sure he's betting all of the thinnish value check raises on the flop on the turn when 6-7 comes in?
That's a great question.
Like, is he betting 9-10 now? I don't know.
Don't know. He may not be.
I wouldn't expect him to.
Hmm. That's interesting. If he's not betting any of his one pair of hands, that changes things kind of dramatically because now what can we actually beat? Much less. Now we can beat Queen 10, Jack 10.
Queen Jack.
Queen Jack. If he turned... I mean, sometimes these guys, you know, will turn weird hands into a bluff, like one pair of hands into a bluff. It's hard to see him doing that with an 8 or a 9, and I don't know what deuce he's going to have that he's going to do that with either. So probably can't have one pair here. Oh, he could have had a gut shot with a 5 in his hand somehow? 5-7? Suited? God, that's rough. That's hard to believe. I guess it's possible, but it seems pretty unlikely.
Yeah.
And then he turned to the 5 somehow. He had two back doors, like ace-x of whatever, had two back doors and turned to 5. So he checks. I mean, that seems crazy, too. Like, he's just going to keep going, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if he's going to... He just knows he has to bluff most of the time when he gets called. And so he bluffs the 5. I don't know what he's doing with the 5. There's not much here if he's not going to bet top pair.
Yeah, I'm not sure. He might bet top pair. He's Matt Berkey. He does different stuff.
He might. Because he's going to check call it anyway. So he might bet it. And he's like, well, if Negreanu moves in, I can just fold. Like,
yeah. A thing in favor of Negreanu moving in is he has the spades, which, of course, is good for his outs, but also means that of the three combos that are somewhat problematic for Negreanu, that are the straight draws that are bigger than his that are still beating him, and if they go to showdown, will win, he blocks two of the spade combos, which will call, and the non-spade combos are going to have to fold.
That's, of course, Jack 10 of spades, Queen 10 of spades, and Queen Jack of spades are the three you're referring to,
Yeah, so that's good.
That is nice. Yeah. That's true.
I think I lean towards a move-in. I think I like it best.
I think we should just move in, man. Like, there's only... 27K, oh no, there's 37K back, and the pot, if we call, will have 36,400 in it.
Yeah.
It's like set up beautifully for this. And I guess we could be concerned that Berkey's setting up a river shove, but you know, that doesn't have to be for value.
No, it does not.
And you could just be threatening that anyway. It just feels like really natural to move in here. And if we get called, we still get there sometimes, you know?
Yep.
Like, it isn't like we've got a gut shot. We have a gut shot and a flush draw. It's beautiful, maybe.
I prefer a move in.
Yeah.
Negreanu calls.
Okay.
He's Negreanu.
I mean, okay, he's in position at least.
Yeah. He gets to, you know, Berkey's going to shut down sometimes when he's bluffing, but it does really suck when Berkey doesn't shut down and you lose to queen high.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, at least we only have 10 high ourselves. Yeah. But, like, we could have won that one.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, it looks, I mean, it's kind of set up for Daniel to be, not get this one. Not, this isn't going to work out very often for him now, right?
Well, one benefit of this call is that Matt Berkey is now very uncomfortable, and you can revel in that as Daniel Negreanu.
That is true. Berkey's like, God.
If you just moved in, this could just be over, and I wouldn't have to think about it anymore.
Right. Yeah. We've all been there where you make the bet, and you're like kind of rooting for the guy to move in rather than call you, right? Because yeah. You're like, I don't have anything. Often it's like, and I'm not going to have anything at this point. So, like, please just move in. Don't make me have to maybe put more money in on the next week.
You know? Bastard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a benefit to calling. Get to make him sweat a little bit. Mm. All right. 36,400 in the pot.
Yep.
Eight of diamonds, deuce of spades, nine of hearts, five of spades board. Negreanu's got 10-6 of spades. Berkey's got queen 10 off.
Yep.
The river's the ace of hearts.
Yep.
Queen high against 10 high.
Queen high is good, bro. Just, Berkey should just know that.
Just ship
him
the chips, man.
It's obvious Queen High is good here, and he should know it.
So should Matt Berkey go for it? And if he does, should he go all in for a pot, or should he bet smaller?
Good second question. Okay, I think he should go for it. I don't think this ace hits a big part of Daniel's range at all.
He has ace nine, maybe ace eight in his range.
Maybe he had two back doors with the ace X of spades. He also has hit the ace. Is he even going to call if we shove? I don't know that he is.
He's got a set of aces that he's going to call with.
Yes, he has that.
He'd play that exactly this way.
But there's less combos of aces than there was before, and he was probably going to call with aces anyway, so this is maybe a good card for us, not a bad card in terms of that. He will insta-call, of course, but it's fine.
Yeah.
I think we're supposed to go for it here. Like, we're repping a good hand. We can absolutely have top two. And maybe we made a play with the backdoor flush draw ourselves, you know, the backdoor spades, not flush draw, whatever, and turned it and, you know, turned the spade draw. So we continued. And now the ace comes and we shove because it's a pot size bet. And we're like, I hope to get value out of jacks or something. Like, if I check, he's just checking it back in.
Well, anyway. Would that be if you're trying to do that type of representation, would it be better to bet smaller?
That's the question. With a pot size bet, could we bet 30K and have it be the same value and to the same effectiveness? And question one. Question two, if we had a set of nines here, would we really only bet 30K or would we just go for it?
I was thinking more like 20K.
Oh, really?
Something a lot more different than the actual all-in for 37.
I feel like against Negreanu, it's a mistake to bet that small.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think we have to bet at least 30 and probably all of it.
Yeah.
Like, let's squeeze every drop of fold equity we can out of these chips if we can. If we got to put in another 5,000 more, 7,000 more.
Right, but as you know, more chips does not always mean more fold equity.
In this case, I kind of think it does. I think Negreanu is trying to be mathy in these spots to some degree. I mean, he mostly just calls, of course.
Yeah.
But pretty mathy. And so, you know, the worse price, the more likely he's going to fold is my guess. Maybe. That ace feels like it could be bad for him. We can have ace nine, right? Like, he can have ace nine too, I guess.
He
actually has probably more combos of ace nine than we do. Actually.
He also has maybe ace eight, and we kind of don't have ace eight.
Well, I don't see how we have ace eight when we bet the turn, right? We can raise the flop, but we can't bet the turn.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Huh. That's not great that we actually, maybe he has more aces than we do because of that, right?
Yeah.
He has all the ace nines and ace eight too.
Yeah.
And we have only a few ace nines. But still, mostly this ace doesn't hit him.
Mostly not. But what does he have then?
If he has jacks, is he just going to call anyway if we shove?
I don't know.
I don't know either. He is Negreanu. He loves to call. Maybe if you're Berkey, you're just like, I just can't keep going because this guy calls too much.
If Berkey were to move in, do you think he can reasonably be repping a singular ace like that had the backdoor not flush draw that came in on the turn and then hit the ace on the river?
That's a really good question. Because the question is, can I get jacks to call now?
Yeah.
Right? Not can I get jacks to fold. Because it's Negreanu, maybe we can do that.
Maybe.
Maybe we can do that. It also, I mean, the good news is it looks a little weird and desperate that ace isn't supposed to do anything for Berkey.
Yeah.
Right? So either he already has a monster, and the only monsters he have that are really obvious is 9-8 or pocket deuces. I guess pocket deuces is right there, though. I guess an ace 9. You can have ace 9.
Yeah.
And 6-7. Oh, 6-7's there too.
Yeah.
I think he's supposed to move in. I think he's supposed to say, I can have 6-7, sucker. I can have 6-7, sucker.
Negreanu has more 6-7, though. He probably has unsuited combos.
I don't know if he does or not. He very well may. Certainly, Berkey doesn't. So, yeah. Negreanu at worst has the same amount of 6-7, if not more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it evens out a little bit because Negreanu didn't raise the turn. He might raise the turn with 6-7 a decent amount of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe he doesn't. Maybe with a pot size bet back, he's just not raising.
I think if I were Negreanu against Matt Berkey, I'd probably just call. Yeah. Especially thinking like this guy likes to make some tight folds and he might blast off. He definitely is known for sometimes blasting off. And I'm in position. Like, this is a really beautiful setup to just call here. Like, if he goes runner spades on me, so be it. You know, this is in the world where Daniel has 6-7 not of spades. So be it. Like, but let's try and capture the biggest pot possible. So I think he is calling a lot with 6-7.
So you're still leaning towards moving in though, is Berkey?
I feel like we've created this whole thing. Yeah, I want to move in.
So we're targeting mostly pocket pairs between the nine and the ace and nines.
Yeah, I think
not a set of nines, obviously, but other nines.
And if Negreanu can never have any eights left in his range, I don't know if he can or not. But if he can, yeah, sure. I think we'd always fold out the eight.
8-7 and 8-6.
There you go.
Yeah.
And maybe we can fold out a bunch of nines too that aren't ace nine or two pairs. You know, maybe even all the nines. I think we're going to be pretty successful with this. I think this is going to get through enough.
Yeah, I'm concerned about the 6-7 and the slow plays, but
yeah,
it's fine.
That is the problem.
I think you're right, but I think it's really close.
I do too.
Berkey ends up checking.
I cannot hate this.
No.
It doesn't look great on TV when Daniel's got 10 high and we've got queen high, and now Daniel's got a great opportunity to win this pot that he never was going to win. But Negreanu is such a calling station. It's not automatic at all.
It is not.
Pull the trigger.
All right. As Negreanu, is it automatic to pull the trigger now that you've been checked to?
Well, now it'd be very surprising for Berkey to have a true monster. Right.
It would, with a pot size bet back.
Exactly. If he has 9-8, is he not just going to move in just in case? Like, he figures he's calling it off anyway against all better hands. So move in, just get called by the calling station's worst hands. I think you do move in with 9-8.
Well, there are the opportunities like this where Negreanu now has a wide open 10 high that might take a shot. So 9-8 could get value from that hand.
That's true. But we could do that with some of our one pair hands too. Like just our nines
that
we played this way. King 9 or something like that. Suited.
Yeah.
Queen 9 suited. Berkey might have that stuff. I don't know. Certainly 10-9 suited. Could consider calling if we check here. Because it's hard for Daniel to have an ace. There's a few, but it's hard. I think we have a 6 in our hand. That's pretty great. Berkey doesn't have the nuts almost ever, or even a super strong hand almost ever with a pot size bet back.
Yep, and we can have the nuts because we would call the turn sometimes at least.
We absolutely have also ace-ace-ace. We have ace-9 for sure.
Yeah.
We might have ace-8. We can have 6-7, and we block 6-7. I think we're absolutely supposed to move in.
All right. Negreanu does.
Yeah.
Is it good to move in or bet smaller?
Oh, back to that same question.
Yeah.
I think betting smaller is okay here, but I still want to size it up. I don't want to bet 20,000, but I think 25,000 might do the trick.
Yeah. I mean, I think he wants to make sure he folds out Berkey's nines.
Right.
Which maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe Berkey calls with the same frequency.
I don't know.
Between those sizes. I'm not really sure. It's hard to say.
With a pot size bet back, yeah, I'm not sure either.
And you know that Berkey folds, otherwise there would have been more than one suggester.
I mean, if Berkey called this, we would have done this as the moment it happened, and if not probably before it happened.
There would have been 25 suggesters.
More, yeah. I think more, because this would be, this would be the hand that people talk about for years if he made this call correctly.
Here. But he doesn't even think about
it. Of course not.
He just lets it go.
He has to.
Yeah. But very interesting decisions along the way.
Yeah, it's weird. There were a lot of very close ones, and I don't know if there was anything that was especially, in our opinion, like where we think that's like, geez, we really wouldn't have done that. We would have moved in on the turn as Negreanu, we think, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's about it. And even then, it's like, it's not that bad to call. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
In our opinion, of course. Like, I'm sure Daniel's got a whole host of reasons, so on and so forth. Interesting.
Yeah, let's see what the solver had to say. Time to see what the solver had to say about these paragons of poker.
Sure.
Daniel Negreanu and Matthew Berkey. This was done by Danny Sprung.
Yeah.
You can find Danny's full works on our Discord in the channel that we create for this hand.
Full works, that sounds like all of the art that he's made.
Yeah, he's like Da Vinci. He's exactly like Da Vinci.
So it's not just art. It's machines.
Sure.
It's plans. It's diagrams.
It's also the dirty stuff that you don't know about that Da Vinci did.
Yeah, all the sex stuff.
Anyway.
Da Vinci did, yeah.
Let's go back to the flop. not much of note from Pio's perspective on the flop as far as what these players decided to do. Everything is fine. The only thing of note is that Berkey's only supposed to raise 30% of the time with Queen-10, but, 30% is still a chunky percentage, and it's totally fine to do that.
Yeah, he might only be raising 30% of the time, too.
And Negreanu is 100% calling with his hand and never raising. So, interesting stuff.
Cool.
On the turn, Berkey is supposed to continue. Pio prefers he go bigger, though. Danny gave the option to bet 90% rather than 60% of pot, and Pio always chooses that.
Interesting.
Yeah. This is where the play starts to deviate a lot more from what the solver wants to do. It's with Negreanu's call. The solver very much prefers a jam. Wants to shove 93% of the time, call 7% of the time.
It makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Like, Negreanu has 10 high. We're setting, I think he's got like a pot back, right? Like, it's not crazy. It's yeah, about a pot back. It's not crazy at all that the solver would want that. And you know, I remember we talked about that.
Right. I mean, I guess the question is if he has fold equity. Of course he does.
Yeah, you could assume you might not.
Yeah, but against Berkey, you should probably assume you have fold equity most of the time. And of course, in this case, you definitely have fold equity.
And you know, when called, you still get there a reasonable amount of the time. So you can see why the solver's into it.
Although you're up against a pretty bad hand to be up against. But anyway, it's fine.
Well, you're never getting called against that. Yeah. That hand is never calling.
Yeah, that's correct. That is correct. Unless Berkey's just like, you know what? Fuck it.
I'm gonna do it.
0% I'm just gonna do it.
Yeah.
All right. On the river. Okay. Here's an interesting output from the solver, which we can probably just chalk up to the solver randomness, but maybe we can find something else. Berkey is supposed to jam with Queen 10 off if he has the 10 of spades, but not if he has Queen 10 off with the Queen of spades. So he did it right by checking because he has the Queen of spades. But why the 10 of spades is a jam and the Queen of spades is not very clear to me.
Well, yeah, like looking at the board, it's the 2 of spades on the flop and the 5 of spades on the turn. So the 10 or the Queen doesn't, like, neither one of them would ever block a straight flush or anything like that, which is the first thing I would be thinking about. Because of, or even a straight flush draw, I don't know. I believe it's just the solver sort of doing a coin flip here and picking one.
One potential thing that I just realized is maybe it's because Negreanu, when he has a flush draw with showdown value, it more likely contains the Queen of spades than the 10 of spades. So Negreanu is more likely to have the Queen of spades in his hand when Negreanu has a flush draw, perhaps. Because he could have like ace, queen of spades or something like that and actually think he has enough showdown value to call the turn.
But Negreanu called the check raise on the flop. He can't do that with ace, queen of spades very often.
He's Negreanu. He likes
to call. Yeah, he might. But I wouldn't think the solver would solve for that.
That was my best stab at it. I'm not really sure.
I think it needs a little more equity than that, I think.
I don't know. Anyway, that's what the solver wants to do. So I guess Berkey did it exactly right.
Nice job.
And so did Negreanu. He's supposed to jam because he's got the bottom of his range and Pio wants to jam the bottom of the range.
It's one of those things where you're like, well, how bad can it be, right? Yeah. Like, it just has to get, it doesn't have to get through that often. It's fine.
And of course, Berkey is supposed to call. He did it wrong.
With queen higher. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, queen high obvious. You have to call because you block a queen and a 10.
Yeah. And you do have the queen of spades in your hand, not the 10 of spades.
Right, so that's why you check call. Yeah. Of course,
no,
it's an easy fold.
Yeah.
All right. Solved.
Done.
Music is my sunlight, and all I need is one mic. And I can show every single MC how it's done right. Every time I come by, I'm bound to leave them tongue-tied. I'm sipping on liquor, a quitter is what I'm not. We got one life, and I took a minor break, but I'm back to claim the throne. I'm gonna be traveling the globe, we still have time to make it home.